The American Broadcasting Company brings you Issues and Answers.
This is Howard K. Smith in Washington. It may turn out that the most important thing to watch in this year, 1964, will not be a presidential election, which could turn out to be one-sided. Instead, it may be a development that threatens a serious and radical deterioration in the whole quality of American life. That is, a radical embitterment in the struggle for equal rights. At the very center of the gathering storm over this question is Mr. Roy Wilkins, the head of the biggest, and despite all the noises in the streets, the strongest organization for Negro rights in the U.S., the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. The question is, can Mr. Wilkins and other moderate leaders retain leadership and control of the rights movement in the long, hot, angry, dangerous summer just ahead?
Now for the answers to the issues, from the Executive Secretary of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, Mr. Roy Wilkins. To interview Mr. Wilkins, ABC News commentator Howard K. Smith.
Mr. Wilkins, the average American newspaper reader and television viewer in the past few weeks has been peppered by news discouraging to the civil rights movement, from Governor Wallace's big vote in Wisconsin down to yesterday Senator Gore, a Senate liberal's statement that he can't support key provisions of the Civil Rights Bill. Now, you're supporting the bill. Why don't we have some encouraging news from time to time?
I think there is some encouraging news, although it has a difficulty in peeping out through the murk, as it were. Senator Gore's attitude is not unexpected, but it is discouraging. He objects to Title VI or VII, I'm not sure which, at least the title providing for a discretionary cut of federal funds in the event
six.
Of this. Six, yes. Most of the Southern senators object to this, and a good many other people. I don't think they know the facts, however. Our position is that federal grants and aids to the states in effect subsidize segregation and inequality. In 1962, for example, the Southern states, 11 of them, received a total of $2,463,000,000 in various types of federal grants and aid for a vast variety of services and in their respective states. Now, almost without exception, these funds are used so that Negroes do not get either any benefit from them, or if they do, very little. And some aspects of it are spent wholly as though there were no Negroes in the state whatsoever. That's our complaint. And we do not believe the federal government ought to spend $2,463,000,000 allocated to the states without saying you may not discriminate against the American citizens who live in your states and who happen to be black.
Tell me, with all this news about the Civil Rights Bill and all the pressures on it, are you encouraged or discouraged? You think it's going to pass without serious amendment or not?
I think it's going to pass without serious amendment. I think there may be amendments. Personally, we're not willing to concede even a period or a comma, not even at this stage. But I suppose that's politically unrealistic. There will be some periods and commas changed. But I look for a bill strong and useful, in spite of the talk of the moment.
Now, there have been 40 days of debate. We're going into the eighth week tomorrow morning. Have you got a deadline, a tentative deadline, set in your mind when this bill ought to be voted on and passed?
Of course, Mr. Smith, I think the bill should have been voted on and passed by, let's say, the end of April. I was willing to do that. I think from here on in, the Senate can be accused of a stall-in on the Civil Rights Bill. And someone has said, in reply to the criticisms of the projected and ill-fated, fortunately, and ill-chosen stall-in for the World's Fair, that if they accuse us of stalling the World's Fair, which is an amusement, the Senate can fairly be accused of a stall-in on the civil rights of 18 million people, and that's far more serious.
Well, isn't it true that the Senate is punishing you when it stalls in, but those demonstrations punished Lyndon Johnson, who's for the Civil Rights Bill, and caused no anguish at all to Senator Russell or to Governor Wallace, who are opposed to it?
In fact, they caused Senator Russell and Governor Wallace glee. And they were very pleased with the stall-in, and that's one of the reasons the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People objected to this as a tactic, and that's the reason National Corps objected to it. And James Farmer pointed out that it was, I think I use his term correctly, unfocused. In other words, it was shooting at the wrong target and should have been condemned and should have failed. However, I don't think we ought to forget that this mirrors a considerable bitter feeling among the colored people, and the young men who led it took the brunt of the blame, but a good many people behind the scenes, while not active, could not be said to be on the side of the authorities.
Now, there's a great deal of talk about how impatient these young people are. In fact, today's New York Times says there are doubts about you, Mr. Roy Wilkins, for not producing, quote, results, unquote. Do you feel this tug at you from the young, impatient people in the Negro civil rights movement?
My feeling is that every generation of young people produces its quota of those who say the oldsters haven't produced. And yet they come into the kind of a world in which they can pick up and go forward. In other words, the oldsters have made it possible for them to have a platform or a channel or a roadway, as you choose, and they can proceed with much less hindrance than the oldsters proceeded at their age. And some of this impatience I attribute to just the change in generations. I felt the same way when I was 21 years old, that the oldsters hadn't done very well with the world.
And at that time, the NAACP was a pretty radical movement, wasn't it?
Well, it was very dangerous to belong to the NAACP 35 years ago.
What's the trend in NAACP membership?
Upward. We gained 117,000 newly paid members last year. This was a 26% gain. And if that were General Motors, that would be a healthy gain indeed.
Well, now, at the turn of the year, Mr. Bayard Rustin said that despite last year's dramatic events, the public revulsion against the events in Birmingham, the Great March on Washington, he said no progress has been made. We're not getting anywhere. Do you believe that no progress has been made since, say, last April when the Birmingham events took place?
I'm afraid I must disagree with Mr. Rustin, although he is an observer on the social scene. I feel that progress has been made. I feel that in social events, in the movement forward of large numbers of people, it isn't possible to measure their progress as you would a locomotive going from station A to station B. But progress has been made. Our contention is that not enough has been made in the light of the crisis that's crowded down upon us in the last 5 years.
Do you think an event, a conspicuous and glamorous event like Sidney Poitier, a Negro getting the Oscar for the best acting of the year in films, is a help?
I think it is a help, but Mr. Smith, we ought not deceive ourselves. The man who's out of a job, or who can't rent a decent apartment, or who's been turned down by a bank for a mortgage when he has the money to pay, and the youngster who wants to get ahead in school and can't make it, they say, I salute Mr. Poitier. And I do salute him. But Mr. Poitier's getting the Academy Award didn't help me get an apartment or a job or an education. And until they do something about that down here on my level, all I can do is to salute Mr. Poitier.
Now, a civil rights leader has said that this civil rights bill is not really very important except as a demonstration. There are enough laws on the books already if they were enforced to take care of any situation. Do you agree with that?
No, I don't. Because I think the fact that a lobby, which has gotten $260,000 from the state of Mississippi alone to fight this bill, is $260,000 worth of testimony that the bill is good. If it weren't good, the opponents wouldn't fight it so hard. And Senator Russell would not be talking about a week's debate on a mild amendment that has been proposed on a jury trial if the bill were of no consequence. I think one way of measuring the importance of it is to see who opposes it and how hard. If we find the Russells turning their back and walking away and saying, okay, you can have the bill, then we can conclude that it's no good at all.
Mr. Wilkins, we have the first Southerner in the White House for 100 years, and he has come out completely and uncompromisingly for the Civil Rights Bill. Does President Johnson enjoy your complete confidence?
I think President Johnson is making a very good president for the country, and that includes the Negro population of the country. And on the civil rights issue, before he became president, he made a number of outspoken speeches on it, and he had no pending legislation then. He was not in the White House. His Gettysburg speech of last year, 1963, and his Tufts University commencement address were speeches that could have been written almost by a Negro ghostwriter. I feel the president feels personally strong on this issue. He comes from a district, you know, where it has not been sharp. People talk about his senatorial record. Of course he has a senatorial record. He's not senator now, though. He's president. And it's what he does as president that counts. And I feel that he wants this bill to go through. He said so in the plainest of plain English on numerous occasions in a political year. And if he wanted to cut and trim and hedge, he certainly could have done so. He has not done so.
Now, the president has been claiming most of the news, as presidents always do, but most of the oratory these days has been from a number of Republicans seeking their party's nomination. In reading their speeches, are you satisfied that they are taking strong positions on civil rights?
Well, of course, the position of one Republican candidate is well known. It's down indelibly, as we say, in print, and that is Senator Goldwater. And he took the trouble to write down what he believes about civil rights, and despite the fact that he's changed on a good many other things, it's not on record that he's changed on that. Essentially, he believes in leaving civil rights to the states. This is his great appeal in the South on this issue. And to Negro Americans, this can only mean one thing, Mr. Smith, and I'm sure you're familiar with it. It means that he leaves them to the mercies of Mississippi, and to rural Alabama, and to northern Louisiana, and to rural Georgia, and to numerous other spots in the South, which have by tradition and practice over 100 years denied him his rights. And when any candidate says he wants to leave the Negro question to the states, that's what it means to the Negro voter. And it doesn't matter what he says about Vietnam, not a bit, or Cuba.
What effect do you think this whole civil rights issue, which is far the most dramatic issue in American life at present, will have on elections in November?
Well, it's hard to say. You know, this is April.
Yeah.
And a lot can happen between April and November. And as all candidates and parties know, it's what the people remember in the last 6 weeks rather than what they learn in the first 6 months. And I believe that the effect of the civil rights debate and what comes out of the Senate will be an important factor in the fall election. And I think what follow-up is done and what the individual states and communities do will also be an important factor. I can't say what the Negroes will do. I refuse to predict. But I know they will be tremendously resentful, and more importantly and more dangerously, they will lose whatever remaining faith they have in the democratic tradition and in the redress of wrongs through the traditional legislative channels and the channels of petition. If the orderly process of legislation fails, we must remember that we haven't asked the Congress since 1954, or at least we've asked them, but the Congress has done nothing since the Brown decision of 1954, whereas the judiciary and the executive departments of government have evidenced some knowledge of the upheaval of the 1960s. Only the Congress has remained immovable, and that is to say, the Senate, insensitive. It's incredible, but it's true.
Now, suppose the Civil Rights Bill is not passed or has to be compromised until it is a very feeble bill in order to pass. What will be the consequences? I think you were getting close to saying what they were going to be.
I'm sure I can't say with accuracy. I cannot say at this time at what point the Negro population would say, well, if this is all you have to give, you can keep it. We don't want it. I don't know, because in politics, the rule is, of course, to take what you can get, if it's at all useful, and build on it next year, next time, next election, next candidates. But in the present mood, the Negroes are likely to say, this is just dishwater. and it's no good to us. And here, Mr. Senate, you can have it. And they will go on perhaps to the streets. I hope not. But they will attempt to settle their grievances in some other way. They could even be more fearful than just marching and parading. And that, too, I pray not. But we ought not to encourage them to do this. If we want them to believe in orderly processes, we should demonstrate that orderly processes can produce dividends, can help them. And if orderly processes don't produce dividends, then we have no moral right to say to them, you should not do this and you should not do that, and this or that or the other is irresponsible. Because those who are running the government, and particularly I think now the senators, are demonstrating irresponsibility when they debate this human rights question after 100 years of exposition.
Now let me assume the opposite to what I said in the last question. Let's assume the bill passes in its present strong tone. Will it take the civil rights movement off the streets and into courts?
I can't say that either, because no piece of legislation has ever settled anything permanently. And we maintain that this is a mild and moderate bill that makes a comprehensive beginning on many sensitive problems. And we think it will do good and start the country on the road to remedial action. We think it will be good for the Negro public. We would hope that they would want to see this bill implemented to see how it would work before they would engage in wholesale fashion in any other attempt to effect change. You don't effect change in the streets. I say that because even though I am very sensitive to what my people suffer, and I suffer it along with them, but you don't effect change in the streets. You call attention to things in the streets. You arouse passion in the streets. You arouse support in the streets. And it must be remembered, you arouse also opposition in the streets.
Yes. That thought was just occurring to me. The Negroes are 10% of the people. In order to get somewhere, they're going to need allies from the other 90%. Is there not a danger? Doesn't Governor Wallace's vote show there's a danger of alienating large sections of that 90%?
Of course, I have my feelings about Governor Wallace's vote in Wisconsin.
What's your interpretation?
I do not believe that it was, in toto, 264,000 votes worth of referendum on the Civil Rights Bill alone. It was too many. But I would say the total could probably be cut in half as to a referendum on the Civil Rights Bill itself. Part of the resentment was against centralized government, against concentration of power in Washington, whether it was power to regulate rates or the power to control drugstores or the power to enforce the Civil Rights Bill. There are a lot of Americans that just feel strongly on this federal regulation business. And I think a large part of the Wallace vote was that. But to get back to your question, the Negro needs to consider, as a part of his strategy, how to enlarge his number of allies. I mean real allies. I'm not concerned with losing the support of people who never supported us anyway. The people who just, if we make them angry, I can't be sorry for that. But I am sorry to lose potential allies, the people who were on your side or who could be won to your side. And when you're 10% of the population, you need to win over 41% or 51% of the other side.
Now, a while ago I asked you what effect the civil rights issue might have on elections. Now, let me tell you what one magazine says it may do. The Democratic Party, since the time of Franklin Roosevelt, has been in the cities a coalition of minorities. Now, in the Chicago primary, which I covered, it was noticeable that the Polish and Irish neighborhoods were turning into the white backlash. They were worried about Negroes coming into their neighborhoods. Is there not a danger that this coalition that has kept the Democrats in for quite a long time may split up over the civil rights issue?
There is some danger to that. But I feel, and that's the reason I feel, that the Negro ought to study the whole situation. In the present mood is to say, we've been hurt, we're damaged, and we're suffering, and therefore we strike back, and we don't care, and we declare, and we declare, and we declare. The other people study the terrain. They study the weather. They study the troops on the other side. They see whether they can divide and conquer or whether certain moves will consolidate the enemy. This is what we need to do. And I would hope that the coalition would not split, where are the Negroes going to go? Where will they go? At the same time, I feel that if they don't get satisfaction out of this coalition, they'll go somewhere. They may not go to the Republicans. They may stay home.
Do you know what the trend is in the Negro registration drive? Has it made great progress?
It's up. We have registration committees working for in 181 cities in the North, outside the South. And we have two offices on Southern registration, one in Richmond, Virginia, and one in Memphis, Tennessee. And they are conducting registration campaigns in the Southern cities. Now, these are going very well. They don't show the spectacular rise that the Northern ones do. But the Northern, the 181 cities, and they're growing every year, every day. We started January 15th, and they will be at work all this year. The Northern cities are showing a tremendous awareness and an upsurge of registration, and we look for that to get better as the campaign gets hotter.
Mr. Wilkins, do you plan any dramatic actions like the March on Washington in the coming year? We have conventions, we have elections, we have the climax of the civil rights debate. What do you plan?
Well, I don't think there will be another March on Washington, of course. The next one would be an anti-climax, even if it had a million people. But there will be some unusual pressure, I think, at the national conventions, which will occupy a portion of July and a portion of August. And I would think that the pressure in one form or another will not relax this summer.
Mr. J. Edgar Hoover of the FBI and a famous columnist have said recently that communists are infiltrating the civil rights movement. Can you comment on that?
I would say that there is a chance that this is true. I don't think it amounts to anything. I think it's in small numbers. But the civil rights movement is presently proceeding is full of individualists acting in individual cities, of small committees springing up here overnight, of so-called movements organized as a coalition with all kinds of people who say they believe in it to come in and join. And under such an arrangement, it's easy for communists or communist sympathizers to join in. But I don't know of any in any directing or policy positions. I don't know that any infiltration has reached up to any dangerous level. As of now, I would say they're merely participants, and we're discovered they're being booted out. As far as the NAACP is concerned, and we have the best organization for this, we have a national policy against it. Our local chapters are instructed how to get them out, and we will root them out wherever they are.
Well, thank you very much indeed for being with us on Issues and Answers today, Mr. Roy Wilkins.
Our guest has been Roy Wilkins, Executive Secretary of the NAACP. Mr. Wilkins was interviewed by ABC News correspondent Howard K. Smith. Next week at this same time, Issues and Answers will bring you the new Assistant Secretary of State for Far Eastern Affairs, the Honorable William Bundy, who has just returned from Vietnam and Laos. We hope you'll be with us. Issues and Answers is produced by Peggy Wheaton, a presentation of the Washington Bureau of ABC News.